Time to take a look at home renovation, remodeling, repair, and energy issues today with two guests, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Chad graduated from Dartmouth. He's a NARI certified remodeler, national board representative for the local NARI chapter. And really pleased to have him with us, as we're happy to have John Viner with us as well from the company Building Services and Consultant of Mount Horeb. He is a qualified consultant with home performance testing with Energy Star and Wisconsin Energy Star Homes, among other things. I'm really pleased to have him with us today, and certainly pleased to have you call in with your questions and comments. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, and we'd be happy to get you on the air. Chad Spate, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
John Viner, good to see you again.
Thank you, Larry.
And John, you're busy?
Oh, yeah. Been a busy season for us. Just the awareness from an environmental standpoint as well as economic, improving the house, right? Mm-hmm. How can we help both those avenues, right?
Yeah, and that's important. And Chad, how about you? You been busy?
Yeah, we've been staying busy. I certainly look at a lot of projects. A lot of homeowners are settling in right now. They're not too eager to be out on the real estate market, so they're improving their homes. And with the energy concerns that people have in our partnership with John and his company, we do a lot of ice dam repairs and energy improvements along with full-scale remodeling work.
You know, we had some damage to our siding last year, and that resulted in a very large remodel, to be perfectly honest. But one of the things we zeroed in on was energy and adding additional insulation and tightening things up and putting in some new windows. And I have to say it made quite a difference in our comfort, for one thing. And frankly, despite the fact the winter was much worse than the winter before, our heating bills were less.
Right.
So it was, and I hate to think what it would have been under the, before we had all that done. So I think it can pay off. And probably when it comes time to resell, I would expect that if you've done a good job of that sort of thing, if you do have to sell and move or want to sell, you're going to be further ahead if you can show that you've done this Energy Star, for example, John.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the MLS listings are offering options here. If they haven't, they will shortly, as far as the realtor can list some of the energy features, Energy Star appliances, or whether it's even had some energy upgrades or a home performance with Energy Star evaluation in the home, or whether the home has been certified as a Wisconsin Energy Star home. Those are becoming selling points and now becoming more noticed within various realtor circles.
And Chad, you mentioned doing some water damage or snow damage issues. I expect we're going to be hearing about mold today, maybe this hour. A lot of people suffered water damage, and that could lead to mold issues as well.
Well, that's true. I mean, mold is pervasive. There's, if you have water and air, you'll have mold. And high humidity can always trigger mold, and in fact, it will. So really, how we live in our homes is just as important as how we build our homes to determining whether or not mold will be a problem for the occupant. You can do everything right with respect to building a home to keep the water out, but then if the homeowners create a lot of moisture and humidity within the home and they don't have good ventilation and systems for dehumidification, then mold can be a problem there as well. But now this year we are seeing a lot of ice damming, water infiltration, and so certainly mold is a problem. It's important if you do have water damage. The most important thing to do initially is to stop the water from coming in and allow the home to dry out, and then things can be properly put back together.
Yeah, we had that issue, found that issue as we pulled off some siding off of one end of our house where we'd had some water damage, and really, I'm really glad we were doing the remodeling because we found a lot of mold in there that we didn't know was there.
Right.
So I was glad that we did that. We had some phone problems, so I think we got those issues solved now. And if you want to join in now, I think you should be able to get on at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Hopefully my voice will hold up for the whole for the whole program today, and my mind as well. But we have lots of callers. Now that the lines are up and running, we've got lots of callers here. So let's see. Who have we got first here? We have got Mark, I believe, coming up first. So let's go to Mark in Milwaukee, I believe. Mark, are you there?
I have over a 100-year-old house that I bought, and I had a question on tube and knob electrical.
Okay. Yes. Well, knob and tube, as it's often called, is really the oldest type of electrical system for whole house electrical. And there are a number of concerns that we have when we're remodeling an old home that has the knob and tube system. It is not a grounded system. There is a hot wire and there's a neutral wire. And that old wiring is attached with ceramic knobs, or it is drilled through the framing and a ceramic tube was inserted. Thus, it's called knob and tube for basically those ceramic products that hold the wiring. The wiring is designed to give off heat, and that's why we run into problems in old homes that are inadvertently insulated. And the knob and tube wiring is thus not able to give off that heat anymore. It gets trapped, and then it can heat up to a point that it can cause a fire. So that's one of the things we have to be concerned about. Generally, at some point, you're going to have to look at updating the wiring system in the home. It's never really safe. If you are going to make improvements or you are going to be running larger amperage items on that wiring, it's always a risk not to update. If you're just running a light bulb on a lamp, you probably don't have to worry about it. But I would err on the side of caution. Don't hook up any fans to that system. Did you have a specific question about the wiring?
No. Well, my question is, the house is built in 1900, and where I've torn it out, I've had all the wiring redone, but obviously there's wiring in the walls. I don't want to tear off all the plaster and wood lath to redo the wiring. And fellas I work with, because I do commercial construction, they say tube and knob is not that bad. Actually, they say it's fairly safe. I think they said exactly what you said. You don't want to put too much. You don't want to run a hot tub on it or anything like that. But I have all new Romex everywhere I've gone.
Okay.
I live in Sherwood, Wisconsin. I have to get a permit for everything I do, so it's all inspected.
Okay.
But I guess I think you answered my question. Is the last thing I want to do is punch holes. It's balloon-framed construction in my house.
Right.
And the last thing I want to do is punch holes and blow in insulation.
Well, you know, all I'll say to that is that the best investment a homeowner will ever make in their home is to improve its energy efficiency. Air sealing, which you could do, you could air seal the house without insulating it and thus reduce the amount of infiltration into the home through those hollow walls. That would be a good idea. But if you do want to insulate the exterior walls, you're going to have to, at a minimum, eliminate the knob and tube wiring that is running through those exterior cavities. It's not necessary to completely gut the interior walls to accomplish both the rewire and the insulation improvement, but you will spend more money on the electrical improvements than you'll spend on the insulation, most likely. The insulation will really pay you back in savings.
Yeah. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dennis in Prairie du Sac, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, good morning. Absolutely gorgeous day here today.
It is.
say, attic insulation. I have a house that was built in 1984. What should the depth be in the attic? I had more icicles than I wanted to see this year, and normally in the past I haven't. But anyway, then how big of a job is it to do it yourself with one of those rental, you know, blow in the cellulite stuff?
Right. So the home built in 1984, it's going to be built insulated to minimum code levels of today, and that's an R value of 38. Insulation depth is going to be somewhere between, say, 10 and 12 inches. If it's going to meet those minimum codes.
Does it matter if that's settled down or should it be fluffed up or put additional on to get to at least 12? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, that's all great, but I don't think that's going to solve your ice dam problem. Just without being on site, I can be pretty assured that adding 2 or 3 inches of insulation isn't going to be the cure-all for eliminating ice buildup at the eaves. It's easy for a do-it-yourselfer to rent an insulation blowing machine and blow more insulation in the attic. Often the rental or the home improvement stores are going to have cellulose there for you as a insulation material and the machine to rent. The key often is air sealing that attic from the home, which is often difficult to identify where those holes are without a blower door test and a thermal imaging camera. If we want to know that we've got it, if that home is sealed from the attic space, then these two diagnostic tests are a key to do that. Again, it's easy to blow insulation, but often there can be some disappointment in the results, even as far as energy savings go, because air sealing is going to be a key.
Yeah.
I would add to that, too. You know, fiberglass or cellulose, if you think about it, the cheapest furnace filter you can buy is actually a fiberglass filter. A fiberglass filters air. It does not trap or retard the movement of air. So you have to first seal, as John said, and then the fiberglass or cellulose or other insulating material is really there to then help reduce the transfer of heat, but it doesn't stop air from moving. And so that is the critical detail. You know, it is possible for a homeowner to do some air sealing, but you can get into some difficulties around a fireplace or around some larger air chases. And there are some resources that you could search online for getting some advice in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
As far as insulation level, my standard recommendation is an insulating value or an R value of 50. So we want to go beyond minimum code standards today and start future-proofing these houses for rising energy costs, for carbon reduction, for the environment. There's a number of items why we want to go beyond minimum codes. Code-built houses, sometimes they're working and sometimes they're failing, and we just got to take it to the next level.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Our guest today, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner of Building Services and Consultant, Mount Horeb, our guest today as we talk home renovation and energy-saving issues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Home renovation and repair on our minds with Chad Spade and John Viner, Larry Mueller here. Carmen Jackson, our on-air producer. Lori in Sparta is up next with a question. Hi, Lori.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, how does one go about getting certified to become an energy or efficient inspector like
John
like
is?
Like your guests are.
Yeah, and yeah.
Okay. Good question. So the state's Focus on Energy program and its administrators offer training. You do have to pre-qualify for that training. There are some simple exams and maybe a short interview as far as skills and background. And then there is a two-week training. Usually it's maybe it's 10, 12 days out of a two-week period, or they break it up over a couple of weeks somewhere central in Wisconsin. I know that they've held them in Stevens Point, a central location, and they may bring 8 to 12 folks together that want to get certified to be an Energy Star consultant. And going to focusonenergy.com or calling those folks is the first step in understanding when the next training. I think there is a training actually here coming up next month, and usually there's 1 to 2 a year.
Okay. All right.
Focusonenergy.com.
Right.
Correct.
And this is in Stevens Point?
This is a statewide program administered by a nonprofit here in Madison, Wisconsin, and they deliver the statewide program. Stevens Point was a point of reference of where they might hold a centrally located training.
Could you find out, if you go to focusonenergy.com, where they might have these training programs?
You're going to have to call the 800 number and inquire, and they'll direct you to the right personnel.
And I presume that number's on this website.
Focusonenergy.com, yeah.
I betcha.
Yep.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, Lori. Matt in Lake Geneva, your turn. Hi, Matt.
Hello there. My question is similar to the last caller, so I'll ask you to expand on it a little bit. The program you described is a Wisconsin state program, but I think the Energy Star program, that's a kind of a nationwide EPA-backed program. So if someone got involved with this Focus on Energy and got training and certification there, is this something that's portable around the country?
Let's think about that. The certification actually comes from a national organization to become a certified ResNet rater or home rating rater.
Okay.
HERS, HRES. can't copy me on that or phrase me on that, sorry. But it's a national certification that is facilitated by this nonprofit and Focus on Energy here in Wisconsin. So this certification can travel state to state, and you can deliver the National Energy Star Certification Program in a variety of states. On a new home perspective, Wisconsin has upgraded some standards that are going to be particular to this state that you'd have to learn.
And in terms,
can I ask a follow-up?
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, is there a separate program that is an Energy Star program that, say, a dwelling contractor could get involved with, or are these the same one and the same thing?
All right,
yes,
Chad?
I can comment on that, and I'll say a couple of things. To directly answer your question, we do have an Energy Star Homes program, and in that particular instance, it is the dwelling itself, the building, that is being certified and given the stamp of approval for having met certain minimal additional requirements beyond code to be more energy efficient, the actual air sealing within the home, testing how tight the house is and looking at the ventilation systems, all that is part of the additional certification of an Energy Star home. So that is not a certification for the builder, but for the home itself. Now, there are certifications for builders, and I'm a certified remodeler. That is also a nationally determined certification that is handled through the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. It actually doesn't have anything to do with Energy Star or energy efficiency per se. It has to do with a total package of me having proven both my knowledge in building science and my knowledge in business management, customer relations. It's a very broad curriculum, and there's about a 6-hour test that we take at the end of the training to earn the credential. And then I have to put in about 10 hours of training every year to keep up that credential. Separately, in Wisconsin, we now have contractor licensing, which is something administered by the state of Wisconsin. Many states have licensing. That also is something that is a credential that one has to earn as a builder or remodeling contractor. So there are a whole lot of different levels of credential out there.
Yeah.
Some apply to the building, some apply to the builder.
Yeah. Interesting. Thanks, Matt, for calling. Appreciate it. And Gwen in Neosho is next, I believe. Gwen, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a home repair issue. 13 years ago, we put a wraparound porch on our home with structurally supporting 5-inch posts that a railing fit into. And we were not aware that we needed to put plates underneath the posts, and they have begun to rot. And I am wondering what is the, you know, if it, we've gotten a couple opinions from contractors, but with the repair on them, I'm wondering if it is even feasible or if the rotting would be likely to continue. What would you recommend? I mean, some of them are separating at about a 5-inch level, and the railing fits into the posts at about 3 inches.
Okay, well, Gwen, let me ask you a few questions. What are these posts sitting on where they're starting to rot?
They're sitting on a cedar porch floor.
I see. So the post itself is sitting directly on the floor, and the floor is rotting underneath?
No. Mm-mm. Water is getting between the post and the, you know, water is, must be kind of wicking it up into
mm-hmm.
the post.
Mm-hmm. Well, without looking at it, it's hard to say, but one possible solution might be, and let me ask this, is the post a treated post, or is it cedar?
They're not treated. They're pine posts, and we were told, you know, that red cedar might be an option. That's something that will not rot,
mm-hmm.
or to put plates beneath it, or to put treated lumber as a repair piece. I just don't know if we're going to have to pay for the repair. You know, is it better to put new posts in? I know that will be more costly with plates, or repair them with a treated lumber piece put in.
Right. Well, there are a couple of things that you might do, and to try to keep it simple, I would say that you are likely at a minimum to be looking at cutting out the bottom of the post and putting in some treated material, but then it's going to be important to connect all of that together. So, for example, you might put in some 2x6 or 2x8 that's been cut in a square, and that will be inserted underneath the existing post, and then you'll have to add some sort of a base detail to wrap around that post to make it look nice and to hide that blocking that you've inserted. It's going to be really important to keep the water out of that so that you don't get additional rot with water migrating down the post, getting behind the new base trim, and then wicking up the bottom of the remaining post again so that you get ongoing rot problems. So the detailing on that's going to be very critical. Generally, we recommend taking the structure itself, the post, all the way through the floor down to the framing of the porch, which should be treated as well. Hopefully, the framing of the floor is treated lumber.
It is treated lumber.
Okay. So if it's possible to take that repair all the way down to the framing so that you've got structural member to structural member, then the floor would basically be notched around it, and the baseboard detail would hide everything and make it look nice and hopefully keep the water out as well.
Okay, so there isn't a plate that we're supposed to put on.
Well, there is often a plate that is attached at the bottom, and you some sort of bracketing or strapping will be required. And if it's a 6x6, which is what I think I heard you say, that's a pretty beefy plate. But it would be covered by that base detail that I referred to. So that might be a way to go.
All right. Good luck.
We need it. Thank you. So you think that the repair would repair it effectively and we wouldn't have to replace the pulse?
Well, that's quite possible. Again, it's going to, as long as there are some details hidden behind that baseboard to keep the water out, then I think you'll be fine.
All right. Good luck, Gwen. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Wauwatosa is up next. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for having on such great guests.
Thank you.
I have a question. I have two questions, if I may. The first one is regards the installation of new windows but not the window frames themselves. We have a red brick ranch with old windows that are in need of painting. And I don't, I'm unsure. I think we want to replace just the windows because it's much less expensive than having the installer do the window, take out the window frames also. But if they don't take out the window frames and the window frames really need paint, should I ask these guys to take out a couple of windows and then have me quick strip the frames and paint them before they put the windows in?
Hmm.
Well, is that not necessary?
Well, I mean, certainly it is important to maintain the painted surface of the jamb and casing and all of that exposed wood that is abutting your brick exterior. It is also true that it is a lot less expensive, for somewhat obvious reasons, to just take out the sashes and slip in either a pocket window or sash replacements. You really do get what you pay for in window replacement. So I would say that painting can be done after the window is installed, because they're likely to, there are going to be some chips and dents and things like that that will probably, they're there now, and there might be a few more once the window replacement is done. And so it would be good to do that work after the windows have been replaced. Are you looking at vinyl windows, or are you putting in an aluminum or fiberglass clad unit? Or
The chances are they're going to be vinyl, at least vinyl clad windows.
Okay. Well, vinyl is not really paintable. Right. There are some paints out there that claim to work, but I don't recommend it. So, but you can, paint the wood after the unit is inserted. I mean, it might be possible to work it out with the installer to do it in between, but keep in mind that, you're going to be without a window for a few days, and I just don't know how practical that is.
Yeah. Well, that occurred to both my wife and I right up front.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Good luck with that.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, and appreciate your call. Bill in Richland Center has a call for us, too. Bill, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. I'll give you the easy one first. I have a relatively new garage, and it is sitting on a concrete footing that's relatively new. The rest of the house is very old, over 100 years old. That the sidewalk beside that garage is tilting in toward the garage. What would you recommend as the better way to resolve the problem? Lift the concrete that's there and put something under it to level it out, or slope it away from the house, or would you remove the concrete completely and put a new concrete sidewalk on the side of it? That's question number one.
Mm. Okay, I can answer that before we go to question number two. How old is the sidewalk?
I'm not sure. This is a relatively newly purchased house.
Okay. Well, generally, if it is feasible for some concrete pumping to be done to raise that sidewalk, that's going to be the most cost-effective way to salvage the walkway and put a proper pitch on it. This is a common problem that happens because the ground around the garage was disturbed, and it has it was backfilled prior to the sidewalk going in, and then it has settled, and with it the sidewalk has settled. It's really important that you correct that so that water is flowing away from the foundation of the from the garage, and that is likely to be the most cost-effective way to deal with it. However, if the sidewalk isn't in very good shape, or and of course that's something that you would have to have professionally done. I don't think a homeowner would be able to raise the concrete. But if professionals in your area look at that and say, well, you're not a good candidate for that, then tearing it out and redoing it would be the way to go. And it'll be very important to compact that soil even further prior to putting in a new walk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, terrific.
All right.
Now, the other one is about air filtration. Now, I've had an energy audit done on the house, and the air filtration, they came up with two solutions, and you've already answered one of them earlier in that they recommended that I go from R30 to R50 in the ceiling, in the attic. But they also recommend that I seal around the footing of the house, which was an old rock ceiling. The problem is that it appears that this has been tried a number of times, and basically I know that there's air filtration, but we can't seem to identify how to best get in there. Do you go from the outside and seal a house? I mean, they had recommended that you blow something in the between the foundation and the floor joist.
Right, so not necessarily the footing, but we're talking about the rim joist above the foundation wall.
That's correct.
And is there anything there right now, like a fiberglass bat that, or is that it's just empty?
What is there is a combination of concrete and even some blown-in concrete, like that sealed the rock foundation, a part of the rock foundation.
Right. So, did you accompany the energy consultant and identify the air leaks within that rim when he did the audit?
He did. He did some of the. He did. And he suggested that you blow it in. The problem is, as I look back on it, it has already been tried. It has already been tried to seal it
with that concrete spray. Yes. So he's the Energy Star consultant there, the Home Performance with Energy Star consultant is suggesting a spray foam product, which is going to probably have enough adhesion to stick to that concrete and provide a nice seal and insulate at the same time. So if that rim joist started out to be fairly leaky, then there's certainly some gains to be had to use an expensive spray foam product and do a good job with one shot, that spray foam. So I don't think it's likely been tried with this, what we'll call a closed cell polyurethane spray foam inside that rim joist. So it's going to be a little different product than likely has been tried in the past. And
okay.
I suggest it's probably going to do a good job for you.
All right.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890, talking home renovation and repair and energy-saving things about the house. And Gary in Ripon is next. Let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hello. I have a house that was built in the 1920s, and it's a standard wood stick construction of that era with no insulation. And the thing I'm wondering is if I go, let's say, for example, if I go into the attic and I put down a vapor barrier, and then I put insulation on top of all that, am I going to get a moisture buildup in my wood framing members and so forth that's going to cause them to start to rot?
So, Gary, do you have a walk-up attic right now, or is it just
it's a walk-up?
It's a walk-up attic, and you've got a floor system up there where you can walk around and use it for storage?
Well, it's not finished off. I mean, that's eventually what I'd want to do, but right now there's just rafters with... And, of course, you can see the lath and plaster from the ceiling from the second floor below.
Right. I'm not concerned with getting a plastic vapor barrier laid down over the lath and plaster and the floor joists and trying to fit in a vapor retarder in between these floor joists. It's not all that important to do that. The important part is stopping moisture transport from air movement and through back to these holes that you may have in the ceiling or in the attic floor. We're not going to... I would suggest not worrying about the plastic and not going there at all. Air seal the top of that home and then blow a loose fill fiber insulation over the top. If it's a walk-up attic and you're not using it as storage space, then we want to get to that R50 after we've air sealed, after we've properly vented the attic.
What do you mean when you say air seal? What do you mean by the top?
Well, the air seal is, we can insulate something all we want.
You mean the second floor ceiling between that and the attic?
Correct. Yep. So okay. There's often bypasses, airs, places, locations where heated air is going to rise up an interior wall around a chimney chase, recessed lights.
Light fixtures and stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. That we want to identify and plug those holes. There certainly can be moisture concerns, but moisture concerns, whether there's plastic there or not, and stopping moisture transport is going to be the key.
So moisture building up, like, or for example, if I did the same thing in exterior walls, that's not something you usually worry about that much?
Nope. On a retrofit situation, don't be concerned with putting that plastic vapor retarder in place. We want a good, like on the side walls, dense-packed cellulose and insulation installed appropriately is going to stop air movement. It's going to stop the majority of the moisture transport.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Gary. Thanks very much for calling. And we'll take some more calls. Matt in Green Bay, I believe, is next. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Great show. Real quick question for you. I'm wondering if you heard of a hot roof application with, a closed-cell type foam. Meaning spraying the underside of the roof with foam for insulating.
Yes, we do that all the time, Matt, and it's actually a very effective way to deal with multiple problems. The reason that we ventilate a roof is primarily, well, there are two big reasons. One is to allow heat to escape in the summer months when it is hot up in an attic space and there's a lot of heat beating down on a roof. But the other reason that we ventilate an attic, which is often not very well understood, is to allow the structure up in that attic space to dry out. And this is a bigger deal in the winter time, in the winter months, than it is in the summer, because we have potential problems with condensation. We were just talking about that with the last caller. When moist, warm air escapes into an attic, it will condense when it hits the cold roof framing structure. And then you've got moisture there in the structure, and that needs to dry out and go away, or otherwise we have a rotting house. So mm-hmm. by sealing the foam onto the underside, we seal up that structure so that we don't have that problem. And we also make it so that there's no air trapped in an attic space that we have to ventilate. So we accomplish the goal of a drier, tighter attic in the winter and a cooler home year-round.
And I would...
is there a problem if the structure's already, it's insulated up in my attic right now?
How is it insulated?
Well, it's interesting. We sprayed the lid, or sprayed the, the ceilings on the attic side of the ceilings.
Okay.
So we sealed that up, and then we also blew in insulation on top of that.
Okay, so on the within the attic, as you go up in the attic, you sprayed it with a foam product on the floor of the attic.
That's correct.
And then blew a cellulose over the top, and that's a great way. So you did the air sealing with the spray foam, and then you did the further insulating with a lower cost product that can be effective to insulate the attic within the attic floor. So that's a great strategy. I'm not sure why you would continue then to go, or if this is applying to your own home or this particular home, why you would suggest spraying within the rafters.
Well, that's my question. It's a fairly large home we built, and I just wanted to, my heating bills are coming back pretty heavy duty, so I didn't know if there was something, if doing the hot roof type application would work or not.
Yeah, so nope, let's steer it a different direction then. We don't want to add more insulation into those roof rafters if we've got adequate R-value, insulating value on that flat or the attic floor. Let's stick with that strategy. Keep that ventilated roof. That's still often the best way to go in a cold climate like Wisconsin, is to continue adequate ventilation. Now, if we've got high bills or comfort issues, of course, we're going to come back to making sure we got the home is relatively tight and we don't have a heat loss through a lot of open chimneys, for examples, or flue dampers that are open, or large chimney chase ways that if we were in the attic and we moved your insulation aside, we could see down into the basement if we shine that flashlight. But it sounds like you did an excellent job with the spray foam. At least that's a good application to make the home tight. The next step is going to be an infrared camera and a blower door.
Yeah, to find out where the leaks are.
Oh, I lost the call.
Well, we're here.
We're here. So you need to go to a blower door test to find out where the leaks are in your home, and then you can attack those leaks. And I suppose one of the Home Performance with Energy Star consultants can help you with that.
That's right. You can search the FocusOnEnergy.com website for qualified consultants. You can find the connection where it says find a consultant, put in your county, and you'll find a list.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner of Build Services and Consultant of Mount Horeb, our guest today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair and energy savings today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner of Build Services and Consultant, Mount Horeb. Glad to have both of them along. Thanks for listening in. Tom in the UP in Michigan is up next. Let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have a similar problem to the previous caller, but I have a metal roof on my cabin that was applied just on stringers, not sheeted, and I'm having a little moisture build up on that, a little condensation problem. I was wondering if adding insulation to the floor up there would be one way to go, or if I could use that spray foam directly on the metal. I think I have about an R, maybe 20 up there, and I have crafted R11 going between the trusses, and then I got rolled on crafted 11 going the other way up there.
So are you having, what are the you're noticing moisture on the underside of the metal roofing.
Right, right.
Is it dripping down or causing issues on the interior?
It only did one time when we left the heat get up through the attic door. Otherwise, it's just kind of crystallized on there, and I don't really see that dripping during the winter.
Right, right. So looking at how that moisture is getting in there in the first place, and two, why isn't it getting out? I guess, is it a vented roof?
Well, it's, like I said,
it's
metal roof.
So that's right.
Just right on the stringer zone, no sheeting.
Okay, okay. We certainly can apply spray foam to the underside to keep that metal warmer. Generally, I'd like to think we could solve that issue without going to that extent. A properly air-sealed attic and properly vented attic is going to work just fine for us, and we can eliminate that moisture in the attic, or at least reduce it so it doesn't become a problem.
I think other than the attic door, I think it's pretty well sealed, and I do have you know, 1 foot vented soffit all the way around.
So you've got continuous soffit at the eaves.
Right.
Is there a ridge vent then, or is this for the metal roof? How'd that, you got gable end?
I don't have gable vents in it, and the top is just, you know, standard metal roof cap with that foam insect and bat barrier between the ribs, you know.
Okay, okay.
And so that is a vented, that's a vented ridge, is it not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That should, you know, you should, I agree with John, if air sealing should be the focus, it wouldn't hurt after the air sealing is done to consider a layer of blown loose fill insulation over everything, because the one problem with the bat insulation is that every place where one bat meets another is a seam where air can move. And so, you know, by putting a layer over everything that's going to settle into those little nooks and crannies, that's going to help to give you a more continuous blanket of insulation, but the air sealing has to happen underneath all of it.
Yeah, that adding the insulation isn't going to do what we want to stop the moisture from getting in the attic, right?
Okay, well, like I said, I crafted between the roof trusses, and I have a plastic vapor barrier on it too, so I think just maybe the attic door is the only real
probably. Yeah, that could be. Ensure that the soffit vents are clear, right? Often insulation's shoved out into the eaves, so we want to make sure that we can see daylight down at the eaves so we know that air has a chance to get into the attic. So it's got to see daylight low. We got to see daylight high through that ridge vent, and we've got an airtight lid in that attic, and we're going to solve a lot of our problems. Now, if you have a home that has a lot of roof lines or different dormers and lots of angles to that roof line, those roofs become even harder to vent appropriately. If we have a simple home, one large attic, those become easier. So look at that venting strategy and air sealing.
And what about recessed lights? Do you have any of those, Tom?
Not recessed, no.
Okay.
Well, that'll help. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Good luck. Paul in Oconomowoc, you are next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have a three-car detached garage, and every spring I have a real problem with the whole floor getting so much condensation. I mean, it's like somebody took a hose and actually wet it down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I tried, all the soffit vents were plugged up. The garage was built in the 60s, so I replaced all those, put a new roof on about 12 years ago, and put a ridge vent across the top. Somebody told me, because there's a ceiling in it, I wasn't getting enough airflow, so I cut a bunch of, you know, 2x2 square holes throughout the whole ceiling trying to get more airflow, and I just can't get that problem to stop. I was wondering, looking for some ideas.
Well, now, this is moisture rising up through the cement slab, correct?
Correct.
I think perhaps if there's a way to alter the grade of the landscape around the garage so that less groundwater is accumulating under that slab, because what's essentially happening is there's a lot of moisture that gets trapped in the ground over the winter time, and then when the spring thaw comes, that moisture is going to work its way out, and it sounds like a lot of it is under the garage, and it's working its way up through the cement. And of course, cement is porous. I don't think you're going to effectively solve the problem by sealing the floor, though that is another strategy. I just don't generally recommend it. The better solution is to make sure that moisture, that bulk water, is getting away from the structure, building up the ground around the structure, though being careful not to bury the wooden structure in earth, and then giving the water places to go out beyond it.
Well, one time it was like about a 1.5 car garage, and then the person added on to it. So 3/4 of it, I mean, you can see 2 courses a block all the way around where that's how low the dirt is from the foundation.
So you could...
They said the majority of it, there's really no ground even up against part of the foundation.
Okay, and so is this something, now it happens in the wintertime and a little bit more so when it rains, or is it just pretty consistent throughout?
Pretty much just in spring.
Just in the springtime when we get that water runoff.
Yeah, unless again, I mean, if we get a really lot of rain, like it's rain day, week after week, it starts to just get a light coating.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much about it. I can put a fan on and usually get rid of that pretty easily.
There's no heating source in that garage, is there?
There's
a gas furnace of sorts, or
there's a wood burner in there.
A wood burner, okay.
Now that's how I try to get rid of it in the spring. I torch up the wood burner, put some fans on, and that's how I try to get the moisture out.
Mm-hmm. Another option, often for when we have moisture coming from underneath the slab, is actually what we call a sub-slab suction system, which is essentially a radon system where we're putting essentially we're drilling a core bit 3-inch through the slab, digging out a little pit underneath that slab and putting in a PVC pipe 3-inch and putting in an inline fan and providing pulling the soil gases out of underneath that slab and exhausting them out the roof. So it's a radon system in sorts, but also helps to remove the moisture underneath that slab.
Okay.
Something else to consider there. Thanks very much for calling, Paul. Appreciate it. Kent and Marinette, your turn. Hi, Kent.
Good morning. I have a problem. I have a chimney with 3 flues in it, one for a wood burner, one for my fireplace, and one for the gas furnace.
Okay.
In the wintertime, when I'm running the wood burner and I run the clothes dryer or anything else that creates a vacuum in the house, I pull smoke down my chimney into the living room.
Yeah.
And I, you know, all I had to do was crack a window or open a door and it quits, but I don't know if there's a better way to do this without letting in all that cold air.
Oh.
Yeah, that is a common problem, especially, of course, these fireplaces that may be on a lower level. It gets difficult to solve some of these concerns. One might simply be an exhaust fan that fits on top of the wood-burning chimney on the outside and can operate to pull the exhaust gases up and out of that chimney. Those appliances do exist. It's another mechanical device that's, again, sits on top of that chimney up and out. Makeup air systems aren't very common, but they do exist, where if you have want to bring in outdoor air and actually preheat it, those appliances are available that you can turn on a switch. You turn on an electric heating source to blow 300 CFM across the electric heating elements and blow it into your home so that you can operate that wood stove. It might be that you just need to open up that a window for a little bit to get a draft established and maintain it that way, and then maybe you can close the window after a short time.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your calls. Chad Spade and John Viner are guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair and energy saving issues today with our two guests, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner of Building Services and Consultant of Mount Horeb. Really glad to have them both with us. By the way, Chad, you've got a website people can go to, right?
Yes, we do, Larry. It's chadscarpentry.com, www.chadscarpentry.com.
And, John, you don't have a website, but you've got an email address.
Yep. Email address is John, J-O-H-N, at homeperformancetesting.net.
John at homeperformancetesting.net.
Correct.
Got it. All right. And, yeah, Chad, you got a nice-looking website there,
Thank
too.
Thank you.
lots of good information on that one, so it's good to take a look at it. Susan in Madison has a question for you. Susan, hi.
Hi. This is a theoretical question. I'm looking at houses now, and I'm wondering, is there any practical way to get rid of an interior crawl space?
An interior crawl space?
Yeah, in the basement.
Well, why exactly would you like to get rid of it? Because I'm happy to talk about some of the problems with crawl spaces.
Well, I guess I just had a feeling that there might be problems, and I think they're really creepy, which is not.
Okay. Now, is the crawl space sealed up from the exterior?
Yes, it's sealed from the exterior.
Okay, so you would enter it from, say, an old window in the basement?
You'd enter it from a room in the basement.
Okay. Well, there are a few things that we would generally recommend to improve the comfort in your home and the performance of your home. One would be to insulate the exterior foundation walls and up in the sill box above those walls where the joists are resting on the cement. And then if the floor to that crawl space is not sealed, it's very important to do that because sometimes people will have an open dirt or gravel floor in a crawl space, and that is a very likely source for radon in the home. And I'll just put in a plug right now for purchasing a plug-in continuously running radon detector, which is the best way to monitor that in a home, and it's very prevalent in southern Wisconsin, so we always recommend that. But generally, for the comfort of the room above that crawl space, we would recommend that you not insulate the floor, or in this case it would be the ceiling of the crawl space, but instead to insulate that perimeter wall and then allow the air to interact with the fully excavated basement. Then you have access to the space.
Yes.
Hopefully the critters are not finding their way into your basement and crawl space area from that. And, of course, if you do that additional insulating and air sealing down there, they should not. And that actually having a insulated and sealed crawl space is really the best way, other than having a fully excavated basement, to have a home here in this climate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Susan. Cheryl in Superior, your turn now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thank you. My problem is my garage. The sill plate has rotted out on the southwest side of the garage because of water that's been there for every spring for I don't know how many decades. So now my garage leans southwest. And it, you know, now I can't put my car in the garage anymore because the garage door won't work, and it's ruining the roof, and now I got water leaking. So what I'm wondering is, how can I best prop this up? Do I need to get something, you know, those floor jacks or whatever they are, on each joist, or can I just put a few in there to prop it up, get it even, and then replace the sill plate? And then do I replace the sill plate with treated lumber or brick, or is there like a cement block? You know, small, not really large, or how do I work with this?
Yeah, hopefully first you take care of the concern so it doesn't happen again. So I'll let Chad address how you renovate that garage. But gosh, we're looking to have it rehappen, which we want to prevent, and that's, of course, 101 rain management away from a building, and we all know about gutters and drainage and ways that we can prevent that rainwater or groundwater from coming back towards our buildings.
Yeah, absolutely. Regrading the yard so that this doesn't happen, or its impact is minimized in the future, and then you definitely do want to use treated lumber down at the base where the framing for the wall is contacting the cement. There should be a treated plate. When you go to jack up the old structure to enable this repair to happen, you're going to want to do that pretty carefully. And it's generally something best done by a professional, but if you are going to undertake it yourself, think of it as you're going to have some temporary beams or framing members that you'll put up there, and you'll jack under those beams so that you're uniformly lifting the structure. You don't want to lift the structure just in certain places, because then you'll create distortion and stress on the structure that will cause additional problems for you as you try to restore it. So you're trying to lift that somewhat uniformly. It's not necessarily easily done, but it might be worth having a professional at least consult with you up in Superior there before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Charlie and Kadad, it's your turn next. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, we were talking about different R values and what the guys thought about straw bale construction.
Straw bale construction.
Straw bale construction I've taken a part in a couple of projects, and usually you see that as a group effort, and I think it has its place for the few that want to go that route. I think that certainly we can have our value there within those thick bales, and I think we can create an energy-efficient house with straw bale as well as common stick-built construction. It's all a matter of the details. So I'm not opposed to straw bale. I think with the right intelligent builders on hand, we can build a very effective building and have a long-lasting structure. So I certainly is viable, and I think it's going to be very individualistic. If you have that desire to go that route, it certainly can be done adequately.
But carefully.
Yes. I mean, there's some builders I know that have been experimenting with this in the Madison area, and I know that at Design Coalition there have been some folks working on that. I'm intrigued by it, but we haven't had any clients that have been interested in it. And just as an aside, you know, with the reintroduction of the wolf population in Wisconsin, well, I'm actually.
Okay. Charlie, good luck. Let us know how that turns out. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate the call. Donna in Hixton, your turn. Hi, Donna.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I guess it is now.
Yeah.
I'm looking to have the energy audit done on my home with the blower door and the camera and the whole thing. But I've talked to people who say they do the audit, and then I've talked to people who say they do the audit and the repairs. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little torn between these two sets of people. I mean, you know, choosing one who will get everything done versus having to go with two contractors.
Yeah, well, I'm the independent consultant. I don't do any of the implementation. Essentially, I'm that third party to provide you that unbiased analysis. Certainly, the focus on energy has those two avenues. The insulating contractor is generally the qualified contractor through the Home Performance with Energy Star program that can do the whole building analysis or simply provide the blower door test, maybe the infrared camera. You can certainly go any route. Regardless, you want to know what you're going to get out of it, and you want a building analysis that's going to address the whole house, not just provide solutions through insulating means. Maybe it's a mechanical fix to solving comfort problems. So our role, which I take pride in, is being able to diagnose the whole house as far as what is the concern in the home, and we're going to take the time to do that. If I sound biased here, I guess I am. That third party is going to be the better way to go.
Yeah, I share John's bias as a remodeling contractor. Unlike John, I mean, when someone hires us, we're bringing in John to do that third-party analysis. But I use it, frankly, as a quality control sales point because John is going to basically make sure that we're doing our job and that we get everything right. And, you know, we come back and we are fixing things if we miss something. So I definitely believe in that approach as a remodeling contractor, and I would rather have someone independent testing the work and making sure that you're getting the most value for your money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had a couple of the people that said they do both sides of it and they're willing to give, you know, financial discounts if they do both, but at the same time.
Yeah, well, the cost, frankly, the cost of somebody coming in and actually doing the analysis, if it's an independent person, is not a considerable amount of money anyway. It's a couple hundred, $300 maybe, somewhere in that area.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, so there's not a lot of savings that way.
Yeah, to shed some specific light on that, I mean, it is around $300 to $400, $350, and you're going to qualify for a fair number of potential cash rebates through the program that are going to offset the cost of the investment in that independent analysis.
So. Yeah. Good luck, Donna.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls here. Let's go to Bob in Franklin next. Bob, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I've got a house that has, it was built in 1991, and it has a poured basement walls.
Okay, so 17 years old, poured basement wall.
Yeah, so it's not very old. But it has vertical cracks, you know, where they scored. I think they did that so it would crack in these spots. But it has vertical cracks, and it's rather damp in the summertime. When we get a good hard rain, sometimes I'll get water trickling in through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do anything about that without spending a whole lot of money?
What about the outside again? Is there some work that could be done to Chad or John to get the water running away from the house?
Yeah, the best way to address water in a basement is generally from the outside, though, of course, it is expensive to excavate and water seal after the fact. Generally, there are not control joints that run vertically in a foundation wall. I mean, while it is certainly possible that something like that was done, I mean, the house should be on sound footings, and I'm not familiar with anyone encouraging control joints in that manner. Generally, it would be with a slab that you would see that, or a large concrete structure would have control joints, but not typically a basement foundation. So I think if you can address it from the outside, get water away from the home, away from those areas, if it's possible to build up the grade up to the house, or if not that, then take away some of the soil beyond the home to create a bit of a swale. There are some products that can be applied from the inside, but you're essentially plugging the hole at the last possible point, so the potential or the likelihood of failure is higher by doing that. Oh, yeah. But Drylock is a particular product that we've used with some success over the years, and I've used in my own home when I once had a home with a leaky basement, and it was very effective. So there are some things you can do from within.
Okay. Yeah. Would the dry lock cut down on the dampness then?
That's not... I mean, you could do some damp proofing on the inside by putting up... dry lock makes a product that you can apply on the interior of the wall that helps to keep out moisture. But again, it is... If you have high moisture up against the foundation wall, it's going to be important to treat that on the exterior side to get water away from your structure, create a path for bulk water to go around the house and not saturate those walls, because it will be an ongoing problem.
So is that moisture, is it wet year-round or just certain times of the year?
No, it's just in the summer.
In the summertime. Okay.
If it's not raining, raining or not, the dehumidifier runs pretty much.
Yeah, and maybe it's an upgrade in the dehumidifier if we don't have a quality unit. Not that that's, again, that's going after the symptom here, but it may be a good stopgap in the interim. Is just a quality Energy Star dehumidifier that... units are made right here in Wisconsin from Thermostores, one product that really has a higher capacity.
Wouldn't that also help, though, to make sure that you've got a slope away from the house and your downspouts and all that are properly set? A 17-year-old house is going to have sunk some, and if you haven't, settled a little bit, and if you haven't kept that up.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
That's very important.
Those are first things we got to go after, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah,
well, that
my sister had the same problem with her house, and I went out and took a look, and we got the land sloping away from the house a bit and fixed the downspouts and whatnot, and the problem went away, and she's never had the problem since. So it,
yeah, and sometimes the downspouts and the eaves troughs are not sufficient to handle the magnitude of water. So we, on many homes, we're putting on the larger size gutters and downspouts that are more typically put on a commercial application, but they're much more effective. They have twice the capacity, and instead of having water running over the gutter and then into the ground right next to the home, you're actually taking it away from the house where it should be.
Yeah.
Now, some of my downspouts go into a pipe that goes straight down into the ground. So I don't know where that water's going.
If it goes straight into the ground, you'd think it would be piping out away from the house, and there'd be an outlet 10, 15 feet away from the house where it would be popping up and out.
Yep, if you're on a city street.
I haven't seen that.
That could be the problem.
That could be the problem right there.
Oh, yep. Really?
It might be a simple solution or experiment to try is to break into or just take a section of that pipe out, drain it good 6-10 feet away from the home, and knowing that we got a slope away, it might be a good experiment, and at least you can rule it out if that's works or doesn't work.
Yeah, it wouldn't only cost you a few bucks to do that.
Yeah, maybe that's the answer.
Good luck. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Julie in Mount Horeb, it's your turn next. Hi, Julie.
Hi. We have a walkout lower level that's already been plumbed for a bathroom, and we're finishing it off. And part of the wall that the fiberglass tub and shower is going to be against is concrete. Can we push it up against the concrete if we're going to tile that wall anyway, or do we need to put down like some sort of board first?
On the wall?
Yeah, up against the concrete. It's just the foot of the tub that's going to be, the fiberglass unit was going to be pushed up against the wall, the concrete wall.
Well, I would strongly recommend that you insulate on the interior side of that concrete wall if you're finishing it. And do you know, does the home currently have insulation on the exterior side?
Yeah, it was built about 10 years ago, not okay. quite, and it's got a poured concrete wall, and we do know that it's insulated on the outside of the wall.
Okay. Well, generally, when we remodel a basement space, we will apply a urethane foam to that interior cement wall to give you both additional R value and not to have to worry about the potential for water damage to the insulation. If
okay.
if space is the problem and you need to, you know, fit this unit up tight to the wall, again, I wouldn't recommend it if it's possible, you know, if there is enough space to get away with putting an additional wall insulated, framed with cement board, preferably.
Okay.
That's what I would recommend.
Yeah.
Okay. We can probably leave the space. We just weren't sure if we're going to use the cement board anyway, if we can just push up against the cement or if we're better off. So you think urethane foam would work best insulated?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, Julie. Dave in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi. Actually, I'm calling in reference to the woman who had talked about somebody who's doing both ratings and willing to come in and do the work, and that's what I do with my company, Hearth and Soul, out here.
Mm-hmm.
And just to reassure, one thing that she can consider is that the Focus on Energy program through WEC actually does come out and follow up some percentage, I don't remember what, and follow up on these jobs to make sure that the things are actually getting done the way they're supposed to do. So if she has a contractor she likes that does both like we do, there is a third party that will come out and look at it if you need it.
Good to know. Thanks, David. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Al, have you got a quick question in Rhinelander there?
Yeah, my windows are fogged up.
Oh.
I guess that they're sealed window.
Is it on the inside or the outside of the window?
Oh, it's in the middle.
Oh, it's in the middle.
I guess you call them sealed.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, that's a broken seal on your thermopane, and unfortunately, the only way to deal with that is to replace the thermopane.
Yeah.
How old are the windows?
Oh, 20 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, there's no way to reseal those. I found that out myself with a previous home that I owned that I surely wish I could have fixed that big picture window and not have had to replace the big picture window. So there's a little expense coming up for you, Al. Thanks for calling. And Chad and John, thank you so much. Chad, what's your email or what's your website again?
Well, it's www.chadscarpentry.com. And I can be emailed chad@chadscarpentry.com.
Okay. And John, your email address?
Email is John, J-O-H-N, at homeperformancetesting.net.
Thanks, guys. We'll look for it. You guys will come back again, won't you? Be with us again?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner of Building Services and Consultant out of Mount Horeb. Pleased to have them both with us. And we'll do it again. We'll have them back. And we'll have Garden Talk tomorrow. Laura Jull and Brian Huddleston are guests on tomorrow's program. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.